Welcome to today's edition of Time in the Vineyard with pastor teacher Jeff Toring. Today's broadcast is being brought to you from the pulpit of Liberty Valley Church, Northfield, Ohio.
At what Paul is dealing with here as he is making his way to appeal to Caesar. He's making his way there, and he's making different addresses to different people within politics, heading up the chain within politics. And we find him here in Acts 24 before a governor by the name of Felix. So we'll jump into his defense in verse 10, Acts 24, verse 10. Then Paul, after that the governor had beckoned unto him to speak, answered, "For as much as I know that thou hast been of many years a judge unto this nation, I do the more cheerfully answer for myself, because that thou mayest understand, there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem for to worship. And they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogues nor in the city, neither can they prove the things whereof they now accuse me. But this I confess unto thee, that after the way which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets, and have hope toward God, which they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both the just and the unjust. And herein do I exercise myself, who have always a conscience void of offense toward God and toward men. Now after many years I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings, whereupon certain Jews from Asia found me purified in the temple, neither with multitude nor with tumult, who ought to have been here before thee and object if they had aught against me. Or else let these here say, if they have found any evil doing in me while I stood before the council, except it be for this one voice that I cried standing among them touching the resurrection of the dead. I am called in question by you this day." And when Felix heard these things, having more perfect knowledge of that way, he deferred them and said, "When Lysias, the chief captain, shall come down, I will know the uttermost of your matter." And he commanded a centurion to keep Paul and to let him have liberty, and that he should forbid none of his acquaintance to minister or come unto him. Paul there was on trial before the government, before a very corrupt government. And the things that you read in the New Testament are as today with our lives, as we make advances in the kingdom, we live by faith and not by sight. But that doesn't mean that there is a whole lot of things happening that we don't see. The things that we see happening, if you watch, or I shouldn't say watch the news because then you won't see anything, but if you read actual journalism, you'll find that there is a whole lot of things happening, and there are many things that are behind it. So what we're looking at here in the book of Acts is a guy who is making warfare. But if you would throw your ribbon here, we'll look where faith and sight combine in the Old Testament to see how this same thing is transpiring. So go back to 2 Samuel chapter 24, and you'll find that there is an episode that is also dealing with a virus. Now, David is still in his younger days, and he is dealing with the kingdom of heaven. He is leading the warfare as the good King David, and the onslaught that is coming against him. Now, what I like about when I study David's life is that he is a hero of mine for sure. But I like the way that the Bible is honest. He's not perfect by any stretch. And he makes mistakes, quite a few. Yet, despite those mistakes, God's grace is upon him because of his heart. That is more like LVC men than anybody that I know. Some of you guys I thoroughly enjoy spending time with. There are some men that I just don't like hanging out with. I call it work. But you have to do what you have to do, right? But it's nice now to have men that are genuine, not polished, but genuine. This is what we find when we come back and we see the adventures of David and we jump into this. And what I want to do is I want to work backward. I want to start kind of near the end of the story and then find out why is this. And it'll add an element of discovery as we look at this. So when you jump into 2 Samuel, we're coming into kind of sort of the end of the story. In 2 Samuel 24, verse 18, it says, "And Gad came that day to David." Gad is David's prophet. "Gad came that day to David and said unto him, Go up, rear an altar unto the Lord in the threshing floor of Araunah, the Jebusite." Now, it's good for a king to have a man of God. All kings, and I would say all people, need a man of God by their side. Just something to run things by. Not perfect. Gad isn't perfect. David isn't perfect. But through life, if we want to run well, it's best to have a man of God. Every political leader should have and does need, whether he knows it or not, a man of God. So this is what we have. Gad comes freely and on his own volition to the king and says to him, "Go build an altar in this particular threshing floor on a farm." Guy's name is Araunah, or Ornan in a different tongue. He's a Jebusite. David, according to this saying of Gad, went up as the Lord commanded, which is also good because he's not untouchable. He gets advice from his friend, and he does it. Now, it doesn't always work that way, but in this particular occasion, he does. So verse 20, and it says, "And Araunah looked and saw the king and his servants coming." This farmer sees the king coming to his back 40 and coming up the trail. "And Araunah went out and bowed himself before the king on his face upon the ground." And you can see it. He's got massive acreage. This is a massive farm. And he sees the entourage of the king coming with his prophet. He bows himself in humility. Verse 21, "And Araunah said, Wherefore is my lord the king come to his servant? And David said, To buy the threshing floor of thee, to build an altar unto the Lord, that the plague may be stayed from the people." The virus at this time when he comes to make this purchase, the virus is killing tens of thousands of people. It is an epidemic. A real epidemic. Verse 22, "And Araunah said unto David, Let my lord the king take and offer up what seemeth good unto him. Behold, here be oxen for the burnt sacrifice, and, in fact, I'll give you threshing instruments and other instruments of the oxen for wood." He's being very generous. The king himself is coming. The president of the world power is on his farm, and he's being very generous with provision. He's giving him everything that he would need. "I'll give you the oxen. I'll give you the tools. I'll give you the wood. Everything for an altar to sacrifice." generous. But notice the response that David does. Verse 23, it says, all these things did Arana as a king give unto the king. Which means he recognizes this, because Arana's not a king, he's a farmer. But he realizes we are doing the king's business here. Which makes him feel royal, even though he's just a farm boy. That's us. We may just be a farm boy, we may be just a city boy, but we are in the business of the king. And Arana said unto the king, the Lord thy God accept thee. But look, and the king said unto Arana, no, nay, but I will surely buy it of thee at a price. Neither will I offer burnt offering unto the Lord my God of that which doth cost me nothing. David here has everything at his disposal. He's talking to a farmer who has everything, who's being generous and offering him to everything. And David says, no, 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 I'm not taking it for free. I'm going to pay you for it. It must cost something. This shows that there must be some sort of sacrifice. There must be, it must cost something. I'm not going to offer something to the Lord that you gave me. I have to actually pay for it. Now, which shows how downright genuine David is in heart. Nobody knows. Nobody even cares. It actually is a good picture, it appears, because this guy is being generous for this purpose. But David, on his inside, in his heart, realizes, I'm not going to offer something that doesn't cost me anything. There has to be some sacrifice on my part. I'm not going to give out of the abundance. It just shows, I mean, nobody knows this. Nobody sees this except for him and God. He says, no, I don't want you to give it to me. I'll pay full price for it. What we're looking at is the invisible of the kingdom. You can't see somebody's heart. You know, people come to me often and will say, well, this person is this and this person, you know, they're tattling. Squealing, and that can pay a high price in certain circles, but my thought is you don't know what's going on with that person's life. Don't judge that. Help them, yes, if you see a problem, help them, but certainly don't condemn them. David here is being so genuine of something, and look, there are secret things happening, invisible things. So it says, so David bought the threshing floor and the oxen, now pay attention, for 50 shekels of silver. Now you would say, well, that doesn't seem very high. So and David built the altar unto the Lord and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. So the Lord was entreated for the land and the plague was stayed from Israel. Now again, we have to know that there are secret, invisible things happening, but in the Old Testament, they will reveal themselves as you study through the Word of God. So let's just review why the plague started. And you go, if you back up to verse 10 in the same chapter, working our way backward, what causes the plague? Verse 10 says, David's heart smote him after that he had numbered the people. He transgressed. He wasn't living by faith. He numbered the people. He wanted to see who was in his ranks. How many do I have in my army? How many do I have of the cavalry? How many do I have? He was trusting in his numbers, and so he numbered the people. But it says that his heart smote him after that he had numbered the people. And David said unto the Lord, I have sinned greatly in that I have done, and now I beseech thee, O Lord, take away the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly. Now, it's too bad that he wasn't smitten in heart before he did the crime. You know, the conviction does come. We hope that it comes before we actually do the crime. But sometimes it don't. That's life. You're going to screw up. But don't let it stop you. He knows now, I did something very foolish. So look what happens in 11. He says, when David was up in the morning, the word of the Lord came unto the prophet Gad, David's seer. And he said, go and say unto David, thus saith the Lord, I offer thee three things, choose thee one of them, that I may do it unto thee. So Gad, the prophet, is obedient to what God tells him. He goes to David, and he told him and said unto him, these are your options for your sin as the king. Shall 7 years of famine come unto thee in thy land? Or wilt thou flee 3 months, being before thine enemies while they pursue thee? Or that there be 3 days pestilence in thy land? What do you choose? Do you want to have 7 years of famine? Do you want to run for your lives, having the enemies whacking you down? Or do you want to have just 3 days of famine? Advise and see what answer I shall return to him that sent me. David said unto Gad, I am in a great strait. You realize the pressure that is upon him. Let us fall now into the hand of the Lord, for his mercies are great, and let me not fall into the hand of man. So the Lord sent a pestilence upon Israel from the morning even to the time appointed, and there died of the people from Dan even to Beersheba 70,000 men. This is crushing. But look, there are some other details that we find that happen with this. If we go over to the Chronicles, in 1 Chronicles chapter 21, we have the same story, but with more details. This is the showing and revealing the importance of reading the Scriptures. Us men especially. Now, you women do a great job, but we need to boost the men. We need to be reading the Bibles more often. We need to be students of the Word of God. We need to be equipping ourselves and arming ourselves. We constantly must be gaining ammunition if we're going to do combat. So if you notice here, you're going to find secrets that God has planned for us. He gives you kind of an overview here, but for the student, he reveals things who goes through the Chronicles. And it's the same story, but he kind of reveals and pulls the curtain back for us so that we would know how to do combat better. So if you look in 1 Chronicles 21, in verse 18, we have the same kind of story. Then the angel of the Lord commanded Gad, saying to David, that David should go up and set up an altar unto the Lord in the threshing floor of Ornan, or Arana, the same guy, the Jebusite. David went up, saying that of Gad. He goes up, he runs into the guy. But look at verse 20. It says, and Ornan turned back. Now, this is the same scene. We're back on this massive farm. We're seeing the farm boy, he sees the entourage coming. But this time, he's going to see more. It says, and Ornan turned back and saw not only David and the prophet and his entourage, but an angel also, so much so that the farmer's boys, the four sons with him, hid themselves at the sight. Now, he was threshing wheat, which means this is the time of money for the farmer. It's the threshing point of the season. It's harvest season. This is a very important time. It says in verse 21, and David came to Ornan, and Ornan looked and saw David and went out to the threshing floor, bows himself to the ground, and we already know that. Verse 22, David said to Ornan, grant me the place of the threshing floor, that I may build an altar therein unto the Lord. Thou shalt grant it me for the full price, that the plague may be stayed from the people. And of course, we know that he says, no, I'll give it to you and I'll provide. Ornan said to David, take it to thee. Let my lord the king do that which is good in thine eyes. Lo, I give thee the oxen also for the burnt offering, and the threshing instruments for wood, and the wheat for the meal offering. I give it all. I'm giving it all to you. King David says to Ornan, no, but I will verily buy it for the full price, for I will not take that which is thine for the Lord, nor offer burnt offering without cost. Okay, that we know. But look at 25. So David gave to Ornan for the place 600 shekels of gold by weight. Must be an error in our Bibles. Because didn't we just read it was 50 shekels of silver? There is no errors in our Bible. This is a love letter from God to those who are paying extra attention. They came to Jesus and they said, "Why do you talk to them in riddles?" And he said, "Because seeing they see not and hearing they hear not." But there were a certain few that came to him afterward when everybody else was confused. There were a certain few of the nastier sort that said, "Hey, we really want to know what you're talking about." And it was to those people that he gave the riddle. And that's what's happening here. At first glance, well, it's what's 50 shekels of silver? But then we come across this, and he says, "No, I'm actually giving you 600 shekels of gold by weight. Not 50, but 600. In other words, several million dollars." The first offer, he was only buying the floor. "I'm going to give you 50 shekels of silver just for the floor. But actually for this is so important, I'm going to buy the entire farm for several million dollars for one-time use." Do you see the generosity and the genuineness of David's heart? "I'm going to pay you full market value. I'm going to buy the entire farm." He didn't need to do it. But that's his heart. So when we pass the plate around and everybody gives, that's for nobody's business between you and the Lord. And frankly, I don't care if you give or don't. Because the Lord will give somehow, some way. But you and I have the privilege of giving to the Lord's work. David's doing this because the land, the nation, is in a disaster. There is a pestilence that is roaming. A virus is going throughout the land. But if you look and you read further, he shows you more. It says in 26, "And David built there an altar unto the Lord and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings and called upon the Lord, and he answered him from heaven by fire upon the altar and the burnt offering. And look also, 27, and the Lord commanded the angel, and he put up his sword again into the sheath thereof." This is what we are seeing is revealed are the invisible things that are taking place before him. At first, you don't see it. But then God reveals it for us so that we know. And God doesn't change. So today we live by faith and not by sight, but that does not mean that there is an angel that could very well be standing there with his sword out of his sheath. This isn't figurative, it's not allegory, it's not myth. This is real. So back up again, we'll work backward to the choosing. David has to choose his punishment. If you back up into verse 8, it says, "And David said unto God, I have sinned greatly because I have done this." And you know, and we know the drill because we just read it. "But by now I beseech thee, do away with the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly." And you would think, wait a minute. If the prophet came to David and helped him, wasn't there anybody else that would come to help him? David's about to do a foolish thing, which we all do. But wasn't there anybody else in his life that was like, hey, I'm a friend of yours. I don't want you to hurt yourself. Don't do this. This isn't a good idea. And in fact, there was. If you look over in verse 2 of chapter 21, it says, "And David said to Joab," which is his general, "and to the rulers of the people, go number Israel from Beersheba, even to Dan, and bring the number of them to me, that I may know it." Now look what he responds. Joab answered, "The Lord make his people 100 times so many more as they be. But my lord the king, are they not all my lord's servants? What are you doing? You do know that we have won battles where we are outnumbered 500-1. Because really it's not us that does it." The captain is being his friend, not just his general, Are you sure you want to do this? Do you see the importance of going in and out of the people? You have to have fellowship with the brothers and sisters. You cannot be on an island. Why then doth my Lord require this thing? Why will he be a cause of trespass to Israel? Now look at this. This is good learning for us in church. Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab. Wherefore Joab departed and went throughout all Israel and came to Jerusalem and numbered the people. He did as he was ordered. Now, look at me. I come to many of you for advice because I need advisors, because we are stepping into territory that is much deeper than a lot of other places do. Now, we may be small in number, and that, I don't care. We're going to raise the flag and raise the sword and do the best that we can. I don't care if there's 50 or 10. And I ask for advice. I need advisors. We are doing things that are... some of you are like, one of these days we're going to have the FBI come charging in the church and haul you off. And it might come. Don't think they haven't before. But here's the key. I need you to be advisors. Tell me, but if I don't listen to what you say, don't be hurt. Don't be offended. At the end of the day, I have to make the decision for myself. God has required it of me. Doesn't mean I don't want your advice, though. Give it. Just don't be offended if I don't take it. And hopefully, at the end of the day, when I stand before God, I am less wrong than right. So Joab tells him, but at the end of the day, aye, sir. Numbering the people. Now, the trick to this is, here's the bad part. David sins, but the people, 70,000 men, are slaughtered. And you would think, wait a minute, they didn't do anything. Why is it that David is living and they suffer with a plague and die a miserable death of a pestilence, 70,000 strong, when David is the one who did it? Look, David even says that. If you look in verse 17 of chapter 21, David said unto God, is it not I that commanded the people to be numbered? Even I, it is that have sinned and done evil indeed. But as for these sheep, what have they done? Let thine hand, I pray thee, O Lord, my God, be on me. That is the danger and the responsibility of being in government. If we have wicked, tyrannical rulers, we the people pay the price. And I think we know that. But again, why does all this happen? What has happened that is making this befall upon the nation of Israel? Why is there a massive plague? We know that that David numbered the people, but is that really the reason? What is the real reason why this is happening? That is a good question. If people would just ask that throughout our nation, if journalists would ask, wait a minute, we see what's happening, but why is it happening? Well, if you just jump back, look at it in chapter 20. And we'll get some clues to what happens. 1 Chronicles chapter 20, verse 1. And it came to pass that after the year was expired, at the time that kings go out to battle, Joab led forth the power of the army. That means that God's divine power has been increased upon the army, the power of his army, and wasted the country of the children of Ammon, and came and besieged Rabbah. But David tarried at Jerusalem, and Joab, his captain, smote Rabbah and destroyed it. And David took the crown of their king from off his head and found it to weigh a talent of gold, and there was precious stones in it, and it was set upon David's head, and he brought also exceeding much spoil out of the city. They are experiencing victory. I mean, God's power is behind them. They are absolutely crushing it. Look at verse 3, though. And he brought out the people that were in it and cut them with saws and with harrows of iron and with axes. Now, wait a minute. Let's read that again, because we're in church here and we're reading the Bible, and Jesus is meek and lowly and loving, and love your neighbor as yourself. So let's read that again. This is what the king does by the power of the Spirit. He wastes the king and then takes the citizens of that country. And it says he brought those people out that were in it and he cut them with the saws. He cut them in half with saws. And with harrows of iron and with axes. They are chopping up the enemy. I mean, this is absolutely graphic and gory. It is brutal. Now, even just the record of this history is brutal. But you would think, why does God, in his word, write the graphic details of it? Because he's letting us know that spiritual war is that severe. We may not be experiencing bloodshed right now, but the severity of the spiritual war is being illustrated faith by sight before us. They are cutting men in half. In victory. So then look what happens. Because even though the bloodshed may not be literal, the carnage can be this actual and bitter, but so can the victory be this sweet, a tremendous victory. Look at 4. It came to pass after this that there arose war at Gezer with the Philistines, at which time Sibekai the Hushite slew Sipai, that was the children of the giant. Remember them? There was a particular giant I think we're familiar with. Goliath, David and the stones. Just remember, he had family. Verse 5, and there was war again with the Philistines, and Elhanan, the son of Jair, slew Lami, the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, whose spear staff was like a weaver's beam. And yet again there was war at Gath, where was a man of great stature whose fingers and toes were 24, 6 on each hand and 6 on each foot. He also was the son of the giant. But when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimei, David's brother, slew him. In other words, David's nephew is doing the same thing. The devil is behind it, and he's bringing forth giants against the people of God. Not at once, not twice, but at least a half a dozen to 7 or 8 times. Now, these victories are the cause. You think, wait a minute, isn't it the numbering? Wasn't that the cause? I thought the plague came because David numbered the people. Yes. Is that the cause? You have to search for the truth. Don't stick your head in the sand. Don't be spoon-fed. Wasn't the plague because of the numbering? No, actually, the victories that we see before us have set things in motion to chapter 21, verse 1. Because in verse 1, it says, and Satan stood up. And why did Satan stand up? Because you got the attention of him by victory. And if you're going to stand in the ring to do kingdom warfare, and if you do it well, and if you actually make advancements of the kingdom, you will acquire the attention of the evil one. So Satan himself got wind of such great victories over 6 different giants as Goliath. And he's about to retaliate. And look what he does. He doesn't throw a sword or an arrow. It says, and Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number the people. Be careful in what you do, but don't be afraid to do it. Because in the real world, there are casualties. Not everybody makes it. Let us die trying. That's what we see in the book of Acts happening, is the exact spiritual warfare, but you just don't see it. But it's happening. Angels around, swords drawn, viruses and pestilences going around as the evil and the good clash. That is, if anybody on the good side stands up to clash. And Paul, the captain, the apostle to the Gentiles, has set his face as flint, and he has appealed unto Caesar. They even warned him via the Spirit, you're not going to make it, Paul. You're not going to survive. They're going to bind you and carry you and off with your head. And he says, let it come. And this is what we see now. What he is doing now is he is going for the jugular. He's not going to do the masses. He's going for the kingpins. Most of us guys, we know that. We were taught by the old men. If you're in a brawl, there's more than you're outnumbered. Take the biggest guy out. And you don't always win. I have gone to the hospital several times afterward. But you live. He's standing before Felix the governor on purpose. He's arrested, he is shackled, and now he's standing before a very corrupt government, a guy by the name of Felix. And he gives his defense for the crime that they are accusing him of because he's choosing to do this. He could have got away. But he said, no, I'm not going away. This is my chance to stand before the corrupt government and tell them the truth. He goes on, this is the story, verse 10, verse 11 of Acts chapter 24, and he says, this is what happened, and he's being respectable. You can see him there in the court of law. In verse 14, he says, but this I confess unto thee, that after the way which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets. That is the key. We must believe all that is written in the law and in the prophets. Not just Jesus loves me. No, I like that too. Paul, the whole counsel of God, he says, and I have hope toward God, which they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and of the unjust. And he continues again, he goes on, and then verse 21, he brings out the bullets, except it be for this one voice that I cried standing among them, touching the resurrection of the dead, I am called and questioned by you this day. Because there are funerals. And everybody attends them. And everybody is going to be a participant. Yourself one day, you will lay there. And you know it. And they know it. And everybody knows it. And everybody also knows the surreal feeling of asking themselves, when someone who they've known their whole life, when they die, the question is natural. Where did they go? Paul is bringing this to the attention because it is the power of the resurrection. It is the gospel, the death, burial, and the resurrection from the dead. And he knows this is the ammunition. So what Paul has done to get himself into this place, he has thrown a grenade. And I mean, it's an uproar. They had absolute riots. He was just throwing as many grenades as he could. But now what he is doing is he's transferred to tight shot. Sometimes it's carpet bombing, sometimes it's sniping. Now he's doing tight shot killing to a political leader. And I said killing, because you first must know to die before you can live. You first must know that you are a sinner heading for hell before you can repent and believe. You can't get saved until you know you're lost. And then look what he does. Verse 24, and after certain days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, which was a Jewess, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. Wait a minute, I thought he was on trial for insurrection. And the Spirit of the Lord is opening doors. Now, they're coming to him. We bang our heads against the wall trying to go to give the gospel to people. We bang our heads and bang our heads and bang our heads. But if you do things properly, eventually, it turns around and they start coming to you. We have the governor of a province of the Roman Empire, the corrupt Roman Empire, coming to the Apostle Paul to ask about Christ. Could you imagine Governor DeWine coming to you to ask you about Jesus during a plague? Could it be that this is happening here? After certain days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, which was a Jewess, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. And as he reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, Felix trembled. Why? Because there is invisible things happening around him and in him. The sword has been drawn. It is no longer in the sheath. The Apostle Paul is using it. He trembled and answered, "Go away. But just for this time. Go thy way for this time. When I have convenient season, I will call for thee." What is Paul doing? He is advising him. As a man of God is advising a king. Could you imagine if Felix the governor was converted? I mean, really converted? The difference that would make? Stop trying for a bunt. Hit the ball. As if you can take out the governor, then you take the hill. And brothers, we have the same Spirit of God that he had, and we can take the hill. And in so doing, leading all these people to Christ. You save this government by bringing them into the Lord's government, the kingdom. But it won't be pretty. We know where Paul ends up, don't we? But he ran his race, finished his course.
You've been listening to Time in the Vineyard with Pastor Teacher Jeff Toring. Today's broadcast was brought to you from the pulpit of Liberty Valley Church, Northfield, Ohio. For more information, you can call the church at 330-554-7606 or check us out on the web at libertyvalleychurch.org. That's libertyvalleychurch.org.